Hello and welcome back to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. We have on the show with us today, continuing our conversation about the BICEP2 Consortium Discovery. With us is Dr. Rob Sheldon, a physicist who got his PhD from the University of Maryland and has worked at a number of prestigious academic institutions, including advising NASA and consulting with NASA on some of their projects. Let's continue our conversation now with Dr. Sheldon about the discovery of the BICEP2 Consortium. So in your post on Evolution News and Views, you questioned whether the signal detected by BICEP2 was real or whether it was the result of other phenomena like interstellar dust potentially. Can you explain this to us?
Well, sure. Whenever you make an unusual measurement, you have to exclude everything else that might interfere with your measurement. So this telescope is trying to see the very edge of the universe. The Big Bang radiation is the last thing any telescope can see because before the radiation reaches you, the universe is opaque. So you're looking back in time 13.6 billion years, and the last thing you can see is this wall of radiation coming at you. That's what the cosmic background radiation is. So now if anything is between you and the edge of the universe, you will see that instead. And that includes any galaxies, any dust, any debris left over from the explosion, whatever it is, smoke, whatever is between you and the edge of the universe is going to become a background signal you're not interested in. And how does the BICEP2 people remove all those signals? Well, they spend 4 or 5 pages of their paper just talking about how they get rid of all the background. And so your first assumption is, well, this is a tough problem, but these people are addressing it, and I'm sure they're doing a good job. They wouldn't publish something that was poorly subtracted. Yet their explanation has two unproven theories in it, inflation and gravity waves. And so here I have two models that are not related to each other that both have to work to a very precise way in order to explain my signal, which is itself obscured by many different backgrounds that have to be removed. All I need is one background that I forgot about, one tooth fairy that wasn't invited to the naming event, and suddenly I'm cursed with a spurious signal that I thought was real. And so when I talk to people about experimental physics, I say every experimental data set that gets explained, every theory has one tooth fairy they can invoke, one unusual event that they think might have contributed to the data. But if a theory has two tooth fairies, then it's just very unlikely to be true. And that is the reason why I think that the BICEP2 result is potentially very spurious, because it invokes two tooth fairies to explain data that is already very difficult to extract from the background.
Talking about some other questions that you had about this paper, why did you say in your article that it has a 1 chance in 10 to the 60th of being correct?
Well, that 10 to the 60th number is Hawking's calculation for how precisely the universe has to be tuned in order to explain the data. This is the metaphysical point that is bothering Hawking, that it's so unlikely that our universe got this probability of expanding at just the right rate, that he felt there had to be some other explanation for the data. And so that's where the inflationary model comes in. It's a metaphysical theory. It's a theory that has no other data to support it other than the improbability of the alternative answer. And so in order to explain a unlikely event, the writers have invoked two unlikely events in a row in order to get rid of the one they don't want. And so I was being tongue-in-cheek that they are doing exactly what they were inventing this theory to avoid, and that is making things very improbable.
So the bottom line is, if I understand you right, you can't escape fine-tuning through this new evidence.
You're absolutely right, Casey. The fine-tuning problem doesn't go away if what we pull out of a hat to explain it is itself unlikely. And I tried to think of a metaphor to explain all of this, but we have a tendency to hold on to our pet ideas long after they're outmoded and probably shown to be incorrect. And I feel like this inflation model, was developed 20 years ago, and it has gone through about 4 different iterations. Each of those iterations has added more precision to the inflation model to make it work. And at this point, many theorists in the field feel that the inflationary model is far more unlikely than the problem it was addressing, which is the fine-tuning of the Big Bang itself. And we're in a peculiar case where we try to come up with a better model and we've added more fine-tuning to it. I think that ultimately information doesn't go away even when you try to smuggle it in. You know, this is Bill Dembski's point that all these computer models that supposedly give us the same answer end up smuggling in their information in the way they set up the problem. And here we see an example of it in theoretical physics. They're smuggling the information into this inflationary model to explain the fine-tuning, the expansion rate. You just can't get rid of it. It's going to be there no matter how you try to solve it, that the universe is very peculiarly designed.
Well, I have one last question here, Dr. Sheldon, and this is maybe a meta question, but would you say that is this new paper a case of big science trying to bolster materialistic ideas and retain funding? You sort of hinted that a little bit in your article, although I think that you have convincingly stated why it really won't help materialistic ideas if you're trying to get away from fine-tuning. But is it trying to bolster materialistic ideas, or are we just sort of acting as the unreasonable skeptics here, being sticks in the mud, not willing to just go along with these new discoveries? What is the case? What's really going on here?
Well, Casey, I know I'm going to be labeled a crackpot and a nut here for saying this, but I do feel that big science is being funded by what? Politicians. Politicians aren't really interested in science. They're interested in getting elected. They're interested in leaving a name behind themselves, you know, maybe their name carved in stone on the top of an institute. So these are the sorts of things politicians are interested in. And so what you find is that people who have an agenda often migrate to positions of power. And I think this was Friedrich Hayek's point, that if you have a socialistic form of government, if you have a government that controls the funding and all the big stuff, then people who enjoy power and prestige are going to migrate into those positions in politics. And so now what has happened to science is that the pursuit of pure science has been changed or transmuted or adulterated by the desire to get funding. And I speak with my colleagues all the time who are asking, what is it that is the latest and greatest ideas in physics that can get funded this year? What should I write my proposal on so that it will be funded? What I've discovered is that funding tends to direct the science that people are willing to do. And the politicians are the ones who are directing the funding. And the politicians and the ideology that drives them is shown through the kind of things they do. So just to give an example, in the 50s, we were all told that nuclear energy was going to be the way of the future, that everything would be nuclear powered by the time we got to the year 2000, and that electricity would be so cheap that we wouldn't even be charged for it. It'd be too cheap to meter, is what they used to say. And as you know, that's not where we ended up. Instead, nuclear power is considered bad. Germany shut down all of its nuclear power reactors last year and has switched over to coal. And so you're seeing a big pullback from nuclear power. And it's not because nuclear power is any less usable or wonderful as it was in the 50s. It's because of the public perception of what nuclear power can do. And so in the same way that the nuclear power has been taken over, in the same way the idea of an eternal universe, the idea of a materialistic world, those ideas have dominated the funding of big science. And big science has followed by making models that support it, like the inflationary model. And if you disagree with the inflationary model, which is completely unsupported, but if you disagree with it, you find that your funding dries up. You find that you can't get any research grant accepted. And so that's why I say that there is a bad interaction between big science and these materialistic ideas. And I worry that we're putting in millions and billions of dollars into scientific endeavors in the 21st century that are never going to turn out well, that it will be a dead end because we're being driven by bad materialism, bad ideology, bad metaphysics.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciate your insights in helping us to understand this really important discovery that was made and what its implications are. So thanks for coming on, Dr. Sheldon, and giving us your time today.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.